Micah, it's a really sad day here at the office because I found a dead cricket and I'm just torn apart about it. And I think we should have a funeral to make me feel better.
You know, I think you're right.
It was a really special cricket. I knew it for like a few hours while it was chirping in the office and then nothing, just nothing.
Well, do you think Marco could bring his recorder?
Actually, I have a recorder. Hold on.
What? That's awesome.
Hold on.
One a penny, two a penny, hot cross buns.
Okay, now I feel like we did the cricket justice.
Yes, you're right.
Good funeral.
Very, very good. ashes to ashes, dust to crickets, etc. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. My grief has been counseled, Tiff. We are doing season 3, episode 4, grief counseling. We see Michael go through some trials, tribulations, and I think realization of his mortality. And it's a struggle for him. And mm-hmm. he sort of involves the rest of the office in this struggle that he's going through.
Yeah, he has a lot of
issues he needs to work through.
I feel like he's going through a lot, but he doesn't quite understand what he's going through himself.
Yeah, Pam does. He doesn't. It's interesting.
It's very childlike, just like much of Michael, in that he's not really dealing with his own feelings.
I think everybody sort of there's a reason that there's this thing called midlife crisis. And like, it's a thing that a lot of people go through, be it in small ways or big ways. And Michael is the kind to sort of work around problems, avoid problems, figure out a way to lessen problems, but not quite deal with problems. And in this case, I think that he may not even realize sort of what he's going through, but people in the office do. Mm-hmm. And like I said, especially Pam, because we have this moment where Michael's old boss, Ed Truck, is dead and he learns that he's dead. And here's the problem is that this all starts out, everything's fine. I wrote this down, like everything is fine. But then Kelly kind of kicks things off because he, you know, is telling everybody in the office what was going on. But you'll notice that it wasn't until Kelly came up and said, "Oh, Michael, that must be so hard for you, what you're going through right now." And then suddenly his brain, like you can see the hamster wheel spinning. He's like, "You're right. This is so hard for me. Oh my goodness. I'm having so much pain in my heart." And then he's like on his run. The runaway train has started. Runaway train never coming back. And he is, you know, so sad and everything's bad and I'm distraught, this, that, and the other. And it's like, Kelly, if you would have just not said anything, may have been a normal day at the office, but then we wouldn't have had season 3, episode 4, right?
Yeah, she's kind of the catalyst of everything. But I feel like when he makes that announcement to the workroom about Ed Truck has died, and he expects everyone to kind of freak out in a way, because he's projecting, he's picturing himself as the boss that has passed away and how everyone would have reacted to the announcement of his death. And when everyone's just like gives their kind of blasé version of, "Oh, too bad," and then moves on with their work, Michael sees that and internalizes it. And Steve Carell acts that so well with his facial expressions, just kind of evaluating what's going on. And you see the wheels turning in his head and it being like, is this how they would react to the announcement of my own passing? It sends him into this giant downward spiral that we see throughout the rest of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's dead on. Because you're right. You know, up until this point, it's just sort of a realization that, wow, if I was in this place, I would want to be remembered. Mm-hmm. And nobody here seems to care. And is that how they'd feel about me? And that is a troubling realization for him and results in him sort of forcing it on everybody that they have a big moment in the hopes that it'll, I guess, make that the standard operating procedure when he passes away. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too, because like Ed Truck is no longer a part of the company. And so it's not as if like the boss has died. It's just like somebody who used to work for the company. And I don't know that I've like, that's just a very strange thing to me. Maybe there's some precedent there, because I've never worked in an office like this where it's just, you know, a small wing of a big company. And like if the leader of that company died, would people from the company? It's just very strange. I don't know. The whole thing is very strange.
Well, Ed Truck was the previous manager before Michael in this branch.
Right.
So it's like a couple of the people in the office had worked with Ed Truck when Michael was in sales.
Yeah.
So it's like he's grasping at this man like, you knew this man. Like, why aren't you all grieving for him? Because again, for Michael, the entire office situation, this is his family. Mm-hmm. These are his friends. And if they can't all grieve together for another member of the family, then he's also questioning, like, is this my family? Is this my core support group here that I've put all this, you know, social value in all of these people? And he's not seeing that they put the same social value back into him and like the boss, right?
Yeah.
So he's dealing with a lot of things. And so I really like in this episode how we go from Michael having this basic giant crisis all day about death, which is a really big, hard thing to deal with.
That's what she said. Sorry.
That's a good one.
So we get this nice contrast of what's going on this whole grief day. And then we see what's going on in Stanford, and we're having a chip crisis over in Stanford.
I love this. And I'm sure like the folks who are big on Pam and Jim, this kind of thing can be a little cringy, a little upsetting, but this cuteness really touches me. Like it's so sweet. And I like the sort of back and forth. It's both of them working together. And like Jim kind of sees some of the womanizing nature of Josh. There's something with what, like, Karen doesn't have something done yet. And so he puts Jim in charge of Karen to make sure that Karen gets it done. Mm-hmm. And Karen's like, I could handle it myself. She's kind of annoyed. And Jim, I think, sort of picks up on that. Mm-hmm. And so then he sort of just like completely undoes the stuff that Josh wanted done by spending the day playing this game with Karen. And so like it's very Jim, but it's kind of fun to see how somebody else interacts with Jim in this. And it really feels like it's a dynamic duo.
Yeah, Jim turns on the playfulness. Jim tends to gamify most of his work. And I think that that's what makes him really fun and a cool person to be around, and what makes people drawn to him. And so this is just, it's like the first time we're seeing him becoming like the playful Jim over in Stanford. And he's connecting with Karen in this way, and she's connecting with him, because who wouldn't find that charming? Like, it's 100% attention focused on her, something that she needs. He's being attentive. He's being sweet. He's being playful. Like, that's charming. And it's, I could see that creating a relationship, or at least like some sort of spark between any two people. I like that Jim is himself through and through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we see him gamifying things over in Scranton, and then once he's comfortable, we're seeing him gamify things, is that, you know, over in Stanford as well. So he's able to form these relationships with other people besides Pam, that it's not just Pam, it's Jim, you know, like this is who he is. And I kind of like that. It makes me feel like it's deeper, it's more genuine.
Yeah, I agree. It certainly does solidify, I think, which I enjoy. And we do see, I think this episode, Pam thriving as well, mm-hmm. in her own way, working her own thing, you know, taking care of Michael essentially. And it's really refreshing seeing these two people operate as independent units.
Yes, that is exactly it. I mean, it's even in that cold open that we had where Michael does the stunt where he pretends to go down to the warehouse, Pam immediately jumps on the bandwagon and is like, oh, Michael, I'd really like some coffee. Like, she's totally baiting him in that playful way that she normally would do with Jim, but now she's doing it on her own. And it's really showing that the whole dynamic, it wasn't just because of Jim. Pam is like that too. You know, she has that in her. And we always knew that, like the two of them together, we saw that through the first three seasons or two seasons. But now, like you said, now they're separate and doing similar things. It's just, it's so great seeing Pam take the initiative of the pranks.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Like even in the conference room and Michael calls the grief meeting, you know, she's the first one to make up the story about the fake movie grief that she had. Oh, can we talk that scene? That scene is so good.
My favorite part of the scene is that Michael doesn't recognize the plot of The Lion King, but recognizes the plot of Weekend at Bernie's.
Of course he does, because Weekend at Bernie's is the greatest movie ever.
Oh, so well,
bam,
there you go.
I have feelings about Weekend at Bernie's. I would be really sad if he didn't know Weekend at Bernie's, but yeah.
He knows it, but he doesn't know Lion King. It's just, it boggles the mind, and it's hilarious.
Oh, that scene, it starts off, Michael calls a conference room meeting with the idea that he is going to help counsel everyone through all of the stages of grief.
There are five stages to grief, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And right now, out there, they are all denying the fact that they're sad. And that's hard. And it's making them all angry. And it is my job to try to get them all the way through to acceptance. And if not acceptance, then just depression. If I can get them depressed, then I'll have done my job.
Michael, again, upset. He had heard from Jan earlier about Ed Truck dying. He calls Jan and he's asking her if they can have a day of honor for Ed Truck. He's mad that Martin Luther King, who doesn't work at Dunder Mifflin, gets a day in his honor, but Ed Truck does not. Well, Jan offers to give everybody the day off, which
she gives the day. It was amazing. She gave him what he asked for.
Yeah. And wouldn't that be like, everybody would be so happy, which is the funny thing. Like, we all know that if Stanley heard he could get the day off and then he heard that Michael ruined it for him, he'd be so mad. But Michael is like, you just don't get it. They want to be here. They want to be part of the family. And it's like, no, Michael, that's what you want.
Yep.
And they would have totally taken that day off.
Oh, yeah. That kills me. And then so he's like, no, they need to be here now. And Michael proposes a monument being erected. And then, of course, Dwight is standing right by him offering the most ridiculous suggestions that like, oh, we should do 2/3 size in case it becomes sentient and tries to attack us. And with, I love his drawing of Ed Truck monument. It's so good.
I gave it an extension cord so it can't. And Michael's like, very good.
I would have bought that in the office auction.
Oh, yes. That would have been so good.
That would be so good paraphernalia. Like to have that on your wall and people would be like, what is that? Oh, it's so good. Anyway,
obviously, it's a drawing of an Ed Truck monument.
Of course.
Duh.
Because Michael hasn't given anyone the day off as he was offered to, he decides to call everyone into the conference room. And it's essentially is giving everyone the day off because nobody's working. No. Everyone's kind of in this rap session in the conference room. And Michael wants everyone to talk about their feelings because Michael wants everyone to hear his feelings is really the point of this.
Precisely.
And he describes his feelings in the most epic way I could possibly imagine.
I lost Ed Truck, and it feels like somebody took my heart and dropped it into a bucket of boiling tears. And at the same time, somebody else is hitting my soul in the crotch with a frozen sledgehammer. And then a third guy walks in and starts punching me in the grief bone.
Yes, like I wish that I was as skilled in prose as Michael is when it comes to describing his feelings, because it's like having your heart ripped out and you're having your grief bone hammered and all this other stuff. It's just so good.
Bucket of boiling tears is one of my favorites. It has like that nice alliteration in it. It's very nice. I like it a lot. So to start off, because everyone kind of knows this is ridiculous, that Michael wants everyone to kind of describe their times of grief. And Pam goes first and she begins describing a movie and Michael doesn't get it at all. And she does it in such a way that everyone kind of notices, but Michael doesn't. Michael's giving the very concerned face. And I love the camera catching like Phyllis and even Kevin getting it, like, and Ryan, everyone's getting it. And as soon as it came time for the ball to be passed, she passes it to Ryan. He tells the story of the Lion King. Michael still doesn't get it. And I love when everyone's hand then shoots up. At first, no one wanted to do it. And now they all realize it's becoming this awesome game and they all want it. And so Ryan ends up passing it to Kevin because he's all, ooh, 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 with his hand up. Phyllis is so disappointed that she didn't get picked because she had a good idea. And Kevin's version of this was so Kevin. And it was about one of my favorite movies, Weekend at Bernie's. Oh, I can hear him saying this.
Yes. Okay. I was trying to throw this party once and everyone was over for the weekend. And then my uncle Bernie died. And so me and my best friend, we had to pretend like he was alive. So
wait a second. That's Weekend at Bernie's.
Kevin tries to be cool about it and be subtle, and it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, he's trying his darndest to sort of play the same game that Pam is playing, where you tell the story, but you don't quite tell the story.
And of course, Kevin wrecks it for everybody because Michael understands and he gets all frustrated.
Yeah, Michael calls out Weekend at Bernie's easy peasy, unlike...
As he should.
Yeah, unlike The Lion King or Million Dollar Baby, but... It's whatever. That's the one he picked up on. But it's totally Michael. Like, of course, that's the one he picked up on.
Mm.
What happens next is Michael, of course, gets frustrated because he realizes that nobody's taking it seriously. And he feels like this is a very serious moment. Toby, being the HR person, tries to like counsel Michael. And he's like, death is a part of life. I just saw a bird die this morning. It hit the glass and it died. And I do want to say, not so fun fact, almost 1 billion birds die a year from hitting a window.
Wow, that's a lot.
Or other glass object. Yeah. Can you imagine if we didn't have windows, how many birds there'd be on Earth? It would be the birds. Like, thank goodness.
Maybe we're helping.
Yeah, thank goodness for the invention of windows. Otherwise, we'd be overrun by birds, is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
sorry to all of you bird lovers out there.
I love birds.
I like birds, too.
Every time Toby stands up, in my brain, I react like Michael. I'm like, no! No, Toby, no, not now. Like, I never want him to like, I want him to as an audience member and the dynamic between Toby and Michael. But whenever he's up there, I'm just like, oh, you're going to make it worse, Toby.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
He never, ever like,
helped. No.
It's like any other person you would be helping, Toby, but not Michael. No.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite moments because mm-hmm. Michael essentially is telling Toby, like, you don't get it. You don't understand. You're not a veterinarian. You don't know anything. And it's just like a good Michael freak out moment.
How do you know
what?
that bird was dead? Did you check its breathing?
It was obvious.
Was its heart beating? Toby, did you check it? No, of course you didn't. You're not a veterinarian. You don't know anything! Michael?
And he runs and he tries to save the bird. And that's sort of how the rest of this episode, or rather this plot plays out, with Michael trying to give this bird a funeral to at least salvage some sort of grief for the day because everybody doesn't care about Ed Truck and he feels like everybody doesn't care about him. Well, at least let's give this bird a rest, you know?
So this bird funeral really provides a lot of closure for Michael because it is finally the culmination of what he has been kind of going through this whole day, and the acknowledgement and the recognition that he's seeing Pam give to the bird in her eulogy. Pam says all the right things and that she really says what Michael needs to hear.
Yeah.
And I think it's so endearing of Pam to recognize that, like, there's a time to make fun of things. There's a time to bait Michael, like going to get coffee from the warehouse. And then there's a time to kind of, she nurtures his idiosyncrasies in a way that is helpful. Like, mm-hmm. she helps construct this funeral for a bird. in a very nice, kind way. Like, it's kind of fun for her. You know, she gets to do a little crafty project.
Did I wake up this morning thinking I'd be throwing together a bird funeral? You never can tell what your day here is going to turn into.
That coffin that she constructs is amazing.
So great.
I loved like the little pallbearer handles that are made out of pencils on the side. I like really like paused and checked this thing out. It was awesome.
I'm surprised you haven't remade it yet.
Actually, yeah, that would be a good Halloween costume.
Oh my God.
Just as Pam holding like the bird coffin with the bird in it.
I agree. And like, this is so important to me because I love seeing the playfulness of Pam on its own. And just that this is, if anybody doubted Pam or something, this is the moment where we see there's no Pam is Pam because of Jim or Jim is Jim because of Pam. Like, Pam is her own person and she is, you know, living it truly and playing and having fun and has just as many, you know, fun moments as Jim does. And I like that.
I really like that you brought that up about this episode because it is so true. Like, we're seeing these two people act independently on their in their two different branches. And I think that it's most important that we're seeing Pam becoming a much more independent and more confident person. Like, do you think, I don't think she would have done this or arranged this funeral as boldly as she did if it weren't for like kind of breaking out of her shell and away from Roy and kind of changing her life. And now she's standing on her own.
Yeah. I think you're right. Being underneath that shadow and sort of being oppressed, I really do believe in a way, in so many ways, you know, her creativity, her ability to go to art school or take art classes, all of that stuff, the things that she felt like that she wasn't able to believe in herself before, and being on her own has allowed her to do so. And it's made her sort of the maestro of the office in a way.
Yeah. there's a few little things that happen throughout the episode that I really want to bring attention to. There's a moment where Kelly is crying and Michael finally thinks like, oh, finally someone expressing some real grief, and she's crying about Ryan like not calling her back or something.
Yes.
Because Michael feels like, oh, because he projects it, right? He's still projecting. He's like, oh, this someone is finally having a real emotion.
Yeah.
And he's so mad when it's about Ryan.
He goes over to like comfort her and everything, and then it's like, no, she's just doing her own thing. There is something else I would like to note too. It's a tiny detail, but well, you may remember that not too long ago, I think it was the Casino Night episode.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say, because I have this written down too. Go ahead, say it.
So Dwight in the Casino Night episode is wearing it's the suit that his grandfather was buried in.
Yes.
And we sort of questioned like, okay, what does that mean? Why is he wearing it now? Well, in this episode, Dwight is trying to shove the bird into an aluminum can. Michael comes in and he's so distraught. And Dwight is like, look, I was a farm boy. We like slaughtered pigs we wanted to eat. And then he proceeds to say, my grandfather was reburied in an old oil drum. So what it's
Tuck's mystery solved.
Yes. Dwight dug up his grandfather for his tucks and then reburied him in an oil drum.
For whatever reason that went down, that is how Dwight got a hold of the family heirloom Tucks his grandfather was buried in.
And it's such a subtle note, and I'm so happy it exists. Oh, so good.
And we always talk about how you can watch this show over and over and over again and still find new stuff. This is one of the biggest new things that I found recently.
I didn't know, like, this was literally the episode where I was like, now, hold on. Oh, like before I just laughed at that.
Uh-huh.
But because we had talked so much about the Tucks in that episode, it stuck out and I was like, what? This is awesome.
I know. I felt like Sherlock Holmes figuring that one out. I was like, oh, I'm a genius. I heard this little tiny tidbit. I wrote it down huge. I'm like, Tuck's mystery. Like,
Tuck's mystery solved.
It got me so excited. I want to wrap up what happened over in the Stanford branch before we close out this episode.
For sure.
And because Jim and Karen are on this giant search for looking for these HERS chips that Jim insists that, like, we won't get any work done until we find them. And they're calling all over the place. And I find this kind of thing so incredibly fun. And there's this moment where Karen is also getting very into this, because at first she was like, kind of fizzling out. She's like, I don't want to do it. And then Jim's like, oh, come on, don't be a quitter. And she's like, oh, I'll do this all day, right? And so she calls up a French company in Canada. And so she starts speaking French on the phone.
I'm calling a supermarket in Montreal.
Nice.
Bonjour. Je cherche des chips de la marque Hers. Non? Oh, merci quand même. Au revoir. Nope.
Sounded good.
Thanks.
Jim's face, when she starts speaking French, he gets kind of impressed because she kind of just pulls that out there. And I think that he's a little intrigued that it's like when you start a relationship or getting to know anybody and you find out some like cool, interesting things about them that you just didn't expect.
Yes.
It piques your interest, right? You're like, oh, what else is in, like the layers of this person? Like, what else can they do? What else can they surprise me with? And I like that they gave that to Karen as a little thing. And I don't think it ever comes up again.
Yeah.
That she speaks French, or at least enough French to talk on the phone with someone quickly about some chips, which to me is enough French to get by.
Yeah, that's I was impressed.
Yeah, and so I like that we see their relationship growing naturally in a really realistic way, that she's not just like the wrench in the system, right? For all the romances that's going on. She is becoming more of a real character that we are seeing more about.
Yeah. We're shaping this character, fleshing out this character, and mm-hmm. we can kind of sort of settle in knowing that she'll probably be a part going forward of the show.
And we also get a tiny bit more Andy, which is funny because he tries, again, very much like Andy, trying. I think Andy's biggest description is tries. Like, he's just constantly trying so hard. And he tries to get in on the joke that Karen and Jim are sharing with finding these chips, and they kind of shoot him down. And I love that Andy's...
Yeah, I mean, he tries to help.
But... He tries to help, but he's like more in like a, ooh, tell me your inside joke kind of way.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just tell someone an inside joke. Like, it doesn't work. It just gets awkward.
You can't join the Finer Things Club.
That's right. And I just love that he was just like, have you checked
your butt?
I love that. That's one of my favorite little lines.
Did you check your butt?
It's so childish but really funny.
Yeah, because it's one of those moments where you're just like, just processing, trying to come up with a good comeback, and nothing comes to you. And then he just says that.
I just love when adults in a situation will throw out a really childish phrase, and then that's it, and just like kind of like drop it and leave. I think that's really funny. I always try and do that with like other moms and stuff. I don't think they think it's as funny as I do.
Well, I'm laughing. Oh,
I'm
in
a
spirit.
Teenage boy. Oh, anyway, now that his kappa was detated,
yes,
we are. I feel like per capita here, we're getting more and more quotable lines.
Oh, for sure,
right?
I think you're right. As the characters become more comfortable with themselves and you know, like the characters that they are presenting, and I think as the writers too mm-hmm. get more comfortable with the characters that they've created, I think the lines are more quotable because they feel like they belong to the minds of those characters. And so all signs and all sort of developments point to better and better quotable lines and better antics that are taking place at the office.
There's something that I came across.
Ooh.
And this will make us go a tiny bit longer, but Luann, does this name mean anything to you?
Luann?
Luann.
No, but I do see in our show notes, you said, can we talk about Luann? And I'm like, I don't know who Luann is.
I didn't know who Luann was either until I was... So for every show, my process is I'll watch the episode, take diligent notes, write down timestamps of quotes we like and all kinds of stuff like that, and then write down possible other things, like just notes, right? Uh-huh. General chit-chatty notes. And I will then go to Dunderpedia and reread what they wrote as the synopsis of the show. So that way I can just kind of not just watching it, but reading it and hopefully picking up little pieces to bring to our wonderful audience.
Right.
This time I read about this character, Luann. And she apparently appears in various episodes and she's kind of like in the background of things. And I'm like, I have never noticed this Luann situation before.
Right.
And so I really, I'm sure that there's some super fans out there who are listening to this and they're like, of course, Luann, of course. And, but I needed to bring this up with you.
On what, where? In Stamford or in Scranton?
So it says Luann, if you go to the page, the office.fandom.com, which is the Dunderpedia, over under goofs and trivia, at the very last bullet point, it says, Luann is seen in the annex in this episode, but does not appear at the bird funeral. And I am like, Luann? So I click on Luann. And that shows that there's a couple of, she works in the annex with Toby and Kelly. And she has a desk near the door of the kitchen, kind of where Gabe's desk ends up being eventually.
Yeah.
And so she's in season one and her hair is red, and she's in season two, but with gray hair. And it's like, she's in some meetings and she like kind of, she doesn't really participate. So I was like, what? All of this time, I've never like seen this Luann, and she has a name?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a whole the Luann mystery.
This scares
it was
a little, me.
I know. I feel like I've been bamboozled.
Yeah. And I guess, so I'm reading now, it says that Greg Daniels, he's the producer of the show, thought that it would be a good idea to have some employees that we don't even know anything about. But because all of the characters sort of become important roles in the show, it became harder to explain her presence. And so she disappears after a while.
I know. There are, I love all the like weird gallery shots of her kind of super in the background. I never even thought about, I've never seen this person before.
Yeah, there she is in grief counseling. Whoa, Luann.
Now, see, I feel like, I need to go back and find the Luanns. Like, it's almost like Waldo. It's find
I'm
the Luann
scared.
In the office.
Yeah, where's Waldo? Where's Luann? Maybe there's, I would love some like ridiculous fan theory about like there's some huge conspiracy. That'd be so fun.
I'm sure someone has something, or maybe even like a fan written episode all about Luann.
Oh my goodness. Listeners, if you've come across anything like that, send it our way. Be it fan theories about Luann, conspiracy theories, episodes, fanfic, all that. I want to know about it.
But talk about deep cuts and stuff you haven't ever noticed before.
Luann, a whole human being,
mm-hmm.
as far
just
as we know.
Missed. Well, I think we should talk about human beings that we don't want to miss.
Yes.
And for our Dundee.
Yes. Very good. Very good. So we had some really great nickety names that folks suggested that we wanted to give honorable mentions for.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is going to go to our listeners, Willem and Andrew Mason. That's at Willem_design and at Andrew_Mason1 on Twitter. That is because they had some pretty incredible choices. For Tiff, they had Phileo Tiff.
Which is amazing. Such it came in after we had picked our winner, not to belittle the winner or anything.
Yeah, because also a very good nickname.
It was just, they were both so good.
Tiff Fanny Pack is incredible. Phileo Tiff is incredible because we know Michael loves Phileo Fish.
Oh my gosh, so many levels. I didn't even think of that.
And Andrew Mason came up with two funny nicknames for me. One of them is Micah Drill Sergeant.
So good.
Which is fantastic. Just the other day, I was trying to communicate with someone in a loud room and tell them my last name, and they couldn't understand me because the room was so loud. And so I mouthed it while I did a salute, and they totally understood what I was saying at that point. And so, yeah, I guess I am a drill sergeant.
It's always good when your name is mimeable.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then the other one that they came up with was Prison Mike. Hey,
Prison Mike.
Prison Mike. The worst part of prison was the Dementors. So get on up here and accept your Dundies.
Yay. Congratulations, Woo. Both of you. Thank you so much for all of your submissions.
Yes, there were so many good ones. And, you know, we had to draw the line somewhere.
Yes. Well, speaking of prison, Micah, I saw your prison, Micah, costume on, you sent me a nice little message there. I love that. We are still holding open our costume contest. We said we were going to announce it on the November 1st, but I was like, let's give people a chance to reveal their stuff actually on Halloween. Yes. So we're going to push it to our November 8th episode. And we just keep on keeping on with those costumes. We love seeing them. They're so good. Micah sent me an amazing one, which I will not describe right now. Yes. I'll save it for the Dundee next week. But needless to say, it's really good. Pretty great. Oh, it's great.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of those. And of course, you can get in touch with us over on Twitter at @tall_beats. Of course, thank you so much for listening. And if you want to have a more direct conversation with us, you can become a member of the Incomparable. By doing so, you'll get some goodies at the end of the year. You'll get access to a bootleg feed where many of the podcasts on the network will upload straight from Skype. And you'll also get access to a special members-only Slack where we have a room called the Conference Room where you can come hang out with other super fans of Somehow I Manage and The Office and have a good time there.
Thanks, everyone. And we will be back with another episode of The Office next week where we will discuss initiation.
Bum, bum.
Ooh.
Don't forget.
I like this one.
To include a 6-foot extension cord with your robots.
Oh, yeah. You don't want them to come after you. Just only 6 feet after you, because you could run.
Just smile for me and let the day begin. You are the sunshine that lights my heart within.
Society teaches us that having feelings and crying is bad and wrong. Well, that's baloney, because grief isn't wrong. There is such a thing as good grief. Just ask Charlie Brown.